come up on tight
wire. I'm sitting here in Studio B, across from my good friend, Daniel Chacon.
And I'm sitting in Studio B, across from my good friend, Benjamin Alita Sines.
And welcome to our Christmas edition of Words on a Wire.
Today, what we're going to do to celebrate Christmas is each of us has prepared some reflections on Christmas, and we're going to read them, and then we're just going to talk about Christmas and then maybe read a few Christmas poems.
Absolutely. And I know, and I've always loved Christmas, and I've loved it more as a man than I did as a child. When I was a boy, you know, we were really poor, and Christmases could be sad when I was a little boy because my father was drinking a lot, and he would always drink during the holidays, and Christmas was a disaster. It was just a disaster. And then later on, Christmases were good. I liked it, but it wasn't about gifts. We didn't have a lot of money, so it wasn't about that. But as I grew older, I grew more and more fond of the holiday. I mean, I always get a Christmas tree. I put stuff up. I'm all about that, and I really like it. And maybe Christmas is, for me at least, partially, it's a time of the year when I can give myself a gift, and that is the tree, and I bake guernitos and bizcochos, and I give them to my friends. And it's very peaceful for me. I don't go shopping. I don't do that.
Ben, are you saying that I'm not going to get a gift from you this year?
Bizcochos and cuernitos, and be grateful.
But I wanted the new iPad with Retina display. Well, this is probably a good time to hear your Christmas reflections. This is Daniel Chacon and Benjamin Alita Sines, and this is our Christmas show. Stick around, and we're going to hear Christmas reflections from Benjamin Alita Sines.
So, Daniel, here's my reflection on this year's Christmas. Another Christmas. Last night, I sat in the living room in my new house, holding my new puppy Buddy in my arms, and sat quietly and stared at my Christmas tree. I love Christmas trees and always have. A Christmas tree is like a kitchen. It gives me great comfort. I was remembering past Christmases, and I suppose that's a natural thing to do, to sit and reflect on seasons past. That's what I like about Christmas. For me, it's not about shopping or giving gifts. I've ceased to give them, and I don't expect any gifts from people I know and love. I don't measure love in that particular way, not anymore. There was a time in my life that I invested too much energy and too much thought and too much time to giving gifts that turned out to be of no consequence at all. I don't remember gifts. I remember other things. My mind fell on one particular Christmas. I must have been around 5 or 6 years old. We lived on a farm just outside of Mesilla, New Mexico. A few days before Christmas, my father and my uncles and the other men who were their friends gathered to slaughter a hog for the holiday. The parts of the slaughtered hog would become lard, and the meat would be used for the Christmas tamales and the New Year's Eve menudo. I remember my uncle taking a shotgun or rifle, aiming it at the tied-up hog, and the final squeal. I remember shuddering. I remember thinking that men were cruel, but I was also fascinated by the whole ordeal, the squealing hog, the rifle, the blood, the hog lying dead. The women were in the kitchen baking bizcochos and bread. The men suddenly and instantly became butchers and used a makeshift plywood table. There were some experts among the men, and they took charge of carving up the parts of the hog. My uncle Wile took charge of making the chicharrones over a fire in a big black kettle. He stirred the chicharrones with a big wooden spoon that was as big as a hoe, and I was filled with wonder at the man who had carved this spoon that was much taller than I was. I was not interested in playing with my cousins or my brothers and my sisters that day. I was interested only in watching. I liked the softness and the kindness of my mother and the women in the kitchen. I liked their talk, their easy laughter. I was drawn into that warmth. But I liked the cold outside too, and I wanted to be outside with the men, even though the men were hard and unforgiving and spoke with a harshness that frightened me. Even then, I knew I wasn't going to grow up and be like them, and I hated a little bit of myself for it, thinking that. I remember putting my hands in my pocket to warm them from the cold. I remember finding a penny and wondering what I could buy with it. All day long, I watched and watched and watched and tried to understand all the commotion and laughter and cooking and drinking and cussing, all of those things surrounding me. This was my world, and I was trying to come to terms with it. And even then, I knew that a part of me did not belong, and yet I ached to be a natural part of the universe I was born to. I remember the eating of chicharrones. I remember that first one, fresh from the hot kettle. I can still see the scene, me, a boy, looking up at my Uncle Huile as he shook his head, saying it was okay to eat, that it wasn't too hot anymore. I can see me reaching for the chicharrón and tasting. God, I love the taste, the warmth, the fat mixed with the hard cracked skin as I bit into it. All thoughts of the cruelty of slaughtering the hog that I had fed disappearing into my curiosity and my hunger, such a hunger. One chicharrón, then another, then another. I can almost taste that familiar chicharrón as I sit and write this, and I long for the kind of wonder I possessed as a boy. The 2 days leading up to Christmas that year were full of activity. I remember the tamales that year. I remember the look on my mom's face as she tasted the first tamal, nodding her head in approval and saying, "Ya están, they're ready, the first batch, tamales." My mother looked like an angel to me. She always did. Tamales, my mother, the smell of her kitchen. That is Christmas to me, but it is of a Christmas past. I always tell myself that I loathe nostalgia, that it makes for crooked memories, and it is too often the basis for a lazy and lousy politics. But this year, I am nostalgic. It is the first Christmas I will spend without my mother. I have never known this kind of sadness, and I have never known a wound that ran so deep. And yet, I am grateful for what she meant to me, for what she gave to me, and to my brothers, and to my sisters, and to the world. I know this sounds sentimental, but I don't mind. I'm a sentimental man and always have been and always will be, and I offer no apologies for that. I love Christmas, and I love it even this year. Sadness is not something to run from, and it's not as if there's only sadness. There is also joy. I was raised a Catholic by my mother and father and my grandmothers. My grandfathers were not believers. And though I cannot call myself a Catholic anymore, there is much of Catholicism that has stuck to me forever. I am a believer. I think it is a beautiful thing that God would become a man. It may all be a lie. It may all be a myth. But it is lovely to think that God would take on a man's body and experience that kind of vulnerability. Any God that would humble himself to such a thing is great and generous indeed. I believe because I want to believe. I need to believe. Generosity. A generous God becomes a child that will take a perilous journey toward manhood. That's what Christmas is. I'll end with a part of a prayer of St. Ignatius Loyola. Lord, teach me to be generous, to give and not to count the cost. Perhaps Christmas reminds me that I have not been generous enough and that there is no such thing as being too generous. Perhaps Christmas is a season of giving
because there is something about the human condition that tells us that we need to give if we are to transcend our most basest tendencies.
Ben, that was lovely. Thank you. You know what? I want a chicharrón right now.
I know.
And a tamal.
Oh, yeah.
I tasted your mom's cooking. She was a genius.
She was a genius in the kitchen. When she died, I had that little preface to that little film that we made of her. And I said of my mother's cooking, if living is an art, then my mother was Picasso. And it is. It's really difficult to... She's not there anymore.
Yeah.
There is so much of me that she shaped and formed, and I am in many ways so like her. Sometimes men they want to be like their dads, and they want to think of themselves like, oh, I'm like my dad.
But they're like
their
mothers.
Or I'm not like my dad.
Right, right.
But what about the mother? I'm glad I'm like my mother.
Absolutely. That's one of the things that I've learned is to nurture my mother within me as opposed to my father.
So, Daniel.
Yes.
Enough about my reflections. What about your reflection?
Okay, I have some thoughts about Christmas.
Well, stay tuned. We'll be right back to hear them.
These are my reflections for Christmas this year. We can re-enter our memories of childhood, like entering a dream or virtual reality, and we can be there, look around at all the details. Our memories are not cameras, so everything we remember may not have been exactly as we see it now. The blue car we remember waiting in the alley behind the house to pick up my mother could have been a red car. Still, what we see when we enter these memories can be interpreted like passages from the Torah. The images, the narratives, have meaning to our present lives. We remember some things and not others for a reason. I am a boy 6 years old, and I am a man 50 years old, and although I cannot predict the future, no one knows his time, I can say that I am most likely a 6-year-old boy, a 50-year-old man, and a 70-year-old man holding this pen, writing longhand in a notepad. And the memories all these versions of me share reveal the meaning of my life. So, what does it mean, this memory I'm about to tell you? I'm 6 years old. My brother Ricky is 7 years old. And we are waiting up all night on Christmas Eve for the morning so we can open our presents, which sit under the tree, heavy like bodies we can't wait to uncover and embrace. When you're 6 years old, it's not easy to stay awake waiting for the dawn. And my brother kept doing things to keep me up, asking me questions, pinching me, telling me to put water on my face. I remember this is something Ricky and I did every Christmas Eve, tried to stay awake all night waiting for the dawn. And in this particular memory, every 10 or 15 minutes, Ricky told me to go to the window and look outside for the morning. I would pull up a chair, stand on it, and I would pull the golden curtains aside, stick my head in the frame of cold glass and look, but I didn't see it. We tried to watch TV, but I kept dozing off, the devil and his little pitchfork poking me awake, and Ricky would say, "Go check again, see if the light is coming." So I once again pulled aside the golden curtain to look into our backyard, which was like a field in my memory, and I strained to see the light on the horizon. What I saw instead horrified me. It was a man in our backyard, standing only a few feet away from the window, a hideous man looking in, trying to get into our house. We lived in Fresno, and there were always warnings and stories about robbers entering homes, sometimes killing the people inside and taking all their stuff. The man outside was going to rob us. He wanted to take something from me. I shoved the golden curtain over the window, and I screamed as I jumped off the chair. "It's a man!" I cried. "He's out there, and he wants to kill us!" And Ricky, no fool, ran behind me down the alley to my parents' room, my mother and father sleeping behind the closed doors. Both of us were crying with such intense fear, and my sister, older than both of us, 9 years old, came out of her room, and I told her about the man, and she was crying too, and all of us were pounding on my parents' door, screaming, "Get your gun, Dad, it's a man!" My parents came out of their room, but my father didn't have his gun, and I yelled, "Get your gun, it's a man!"
My father went down the hall by himself as the rest of us cried in our mother's arms at the end of the hallway in front of the full-length mirror as if two families were huddled up and crying into their mother's body. And before my father disappeared into the light of the living room, I pled once more, "Get your gun, Dad! Get your gun!" He disappeared from our sight. We didn't hear him. We only heard our sobs, but they were softened because we wanted to listen. I expected to hear shattered glass, a gunshot, my father's last groans, but what we heard instead was silence, and then suddenly, laughter, the laughter of a man. My father yelled, "Come here!" We looked at each other, not sure who he was talking to. "Richard, is everything okay?" asked my mother. He said, "Yeah, come here, all of you. I want to show you Danny's man." When we got into the dining room, where the window with the golden curtain was waiting for us, Father was looking out the window, laughing. "Come here, Danny," he said. "Come and see your man." I didn't want to. My mother gently led me to the window as I cried like a child forced to look into a dead relative's coffin. She put me on the chair, and I looked out and saw the man was not a man, but a boy. It was me, my reflection in the glass. For years afterwards, my sibling and I would laugh to remember how afraid I was of my own likeness and how my fear was so intense that it spread fear into the hearts of those around me. It would become one of our favorite Christmas memories. I loved Christmas as a child. It was my favorite time of the year, I loved the TV specials we watched every year, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Frosty the Snowman, and my favorite, the Little Drummer Boy. How I adored the act of kindness he showed to the newborn child by giving up his most prized possession, his drum, an act that still makes me weep today. The boy plays his last song. "I have no gift to bring, ba-rum-bum-bum-bum." And he hands his drum to the newborn child, a gift, such selflessness. Christmas was beautiful, and I believed in it when I was a child. Now I am a man. My mother is dead. A few months ago, my father died, and his birthday is on Christmas, so this will be the first year without him. I don't have my own family. I live alone with my dog and my cat. Usually for Christmas, I travel. Paris, Buenos Aires, and I spent more Christmases in Mexico City than I can remember. My siblings are in California, and they celebrate Christmas with their kids, their in-laws, their own extended families. I don't really celebrate it, but this year I am not traveling. I'm staying at home. I have very good friends here who have welcomed me into their homes for the holidays, so this year I'll visit with them, be members of their family. And although I still believe that Christmas is a beautiful thing for some people, for some children, I know it is a horrible time for others. I can't help but feel for those who want to kill themselves on this day, the day with the most suicides of the year, I can't help but bleed for the parents of Sandy Hook who will spend Christmas without their children. And I know that because the tragedy happened so close to December 25th, they have already done a lot of their Christmas shopping. And now, what do they do with those unopened boxes of Barbies, the video games, whatever toys it is that their kids wanted? They must be the saddest presents ever. Maybe even some of them are already wrapped, sitting sadly under the Christmas tree like unmovable bodies. I don't have children, but if I did, I would celebrate Christmas for their sakes. As a man, I can only remember the joy that that day would bring. I can only get out my flashlight and enter into the memory of me as a boy on Christmas. I can look at all the details, the hot pink house on Mesa Street. When my dad painted it that color, my mother freaked out, but he defended it in the name of Mexican culture. "We like colors like that," he said. I can see the 1963 Ford Thunderbird parked in the driveway. I can enter into our large backyard, see the window with the golden curtains. I take a peek inside at the life I used to have, and I see two boys trying to stay awake in front of the TV. And I see myself, 6 years old, walking to the window. He looks. He sees me. I am Danny's man. It really was a man, a 50-year-old man. It was me, and I really do want into that house. I want what that kid has. My Christmas wish is that everyone could have what that kid has.
Daniel, that was wonderful. And you know what's, as I hear your reflection, mine was more a reflection, and yours was a reflection, but yours was really a story. Right. You told us, it's like a short story.
I didn't intend it to be. I just kind of followed it there, and where it ended actually surprised me that it was me looking in. Although I guess I must have known it all along.
You must have. I thought that was really wonderful, and I like you find out who the man is. There's a man, there's a man. You're scared of the man, you're scared of the man. And then you find out at the end of the story that it's you.
And we are our biggest enemies, aren't we?
You know, For some reason, I was reading William Faulkner's Nobel acceptance speech, mm-hmm. that famous speech. He gives advice to the writer and he must do this. And I like what he says, that we have to banish fear. We have to banish fear from our workshop, from mm-hmm. where we live and where we work, to banish it, be done with it. And yet your story is really about how we are always so afraid. We're afraid of ourselves, that we live in fear. And to be a writer is to learn to become fearless. Yeah. And even as you admit your fear, you are fearless.
Right. You know, and it's interesting because there's a lot of parallels between you and me this year. You know, I'm just coming out of a marriage. So this is the first Christmas I've spent not being in this marriage in 6 years. I live alone in an apartment. You live alone.
We both just moved.
We're in our 50s. I just turned 50. And
we both have dogs.
We both have dogs, yes. Although mine is much cuter than yours.
Buddy is extremely cute.
But it's interesting to be in this situation and to negotiate the difference between being lonely and being within solitude. There's a big difference because loneliness, it grows and it festers and it causes your perceptions to shift and make the world a horrible, horrible place. Whereas solitude, I think, allows you to experience the moment in very, very rich, sometimes painful, but sometimes joyful ways.
And then I have this thing that I wrote. I'm making these paintings that I'm putting instead of window shades in front of my windows. And they're like paintings, but they're serving as sort of curtains or mm-hmm. shades. And it says on there, I can claim nothing in this world except for the beauty of this day and this heart that is leaning towards the sun and will lean that way forever. I want to read that every day mm-hmm. as a kind of gift to myself. And we ought to be phototactic. We ought to lean toward the sun, to lean towards Absolutely. The light instead of the darkness. And maybe that's what Christmas is all about, to lean into the light and for one day not live in darkness.
Yeah, and maybe every day should be Christmas.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
The most wonderful time.
With the kids jingle-belling and everyone telling you, be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
This is one of my favorite poems. It is a Christmas poem, but it's quite a serious one. It's T.S. Eliot's Journey of the Magi. And it has a very unromantic view of Christianity, but I think a realistic one and a quite stunning and beautiful poem. And so on this Christmas show, we will share with you T.S. Eliot's Journey of the Magi.
A cold coming we had of it, just the worst time of the year for a journey, and such a long journey, the ways deep and the weather sharp, the very dead of winter, and the camels galled, sore-footed, refractory, lying down in the melting snow. There were times we regretted the summer palaces on slopes, the terraces, and the silken girls bringing sherbet. Then the camel men cursing and grumbling, and running away, and wanting their liquor and women, and the night fires going out, and the lack of shelters, and the cities hostile, and the towns unfriendly, and the villages dirty and charging high prices. A hard time we had of it. At the end, we preferred to travel all night, sleeping in snatches, with the voices singing in our ears saying that this was all folly. Then at dawn, we came down to a temperate valley, wet below the snow line, smelling of vegetation, with a running stream and a watermill beating the darkness, and three trees on the low sky, and an old white horse galloped away in the meadow.
Then we came to a tavern with fine leaves over the lintel, six hands at an open door dicing for pieces of silver, and feet kicking the empty wineskins. But there was no information, and so we continued, and arriving at evening, not a moment too soon, finding the place. It was, as you may say, satisfactory. All this was a long time ago, I remember, and I would do it again. But set down this. Were we led all that way for birth or death? There was a birth, certainly. We had evidence and no doubt. I had seen birth and death, but had thought they were different. This birth was hard and bitter agony for us, like death, our death. We returned to our places, these kingdoms, but no longer at ease here in the old dispensation, with an alien people clutching their gods. I should be glad of another death. That was T.S. Eliot's famous poem, Journey of the Magi.
We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to our Christmas edition of Words on a Wire.
And no matter who you are and what you believe in, may you have a fantastic December 25th and 26th, 27th, 28th, and on and on and on and on and on.
Merry Christmas. This is Benjamin Alida Sainz.
And this is Daniel Chacon.
For Words on a Wire. And remember, the next book you read
could be the greatest gift you ever receive.
Merry Christmas.